We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Live and local sports talk from the upstate for the upstate with G-Mac, JC, and Lonzo. This is The Huddle on ESPN Upstate.
Okay, let's go.
We made it to Friday. Welcome into The Huddle on ESPN Upstate, January 27th. Almost ready to wrap up the month of January as we head toward National Signing Day coming up next Wednesday to kick off February. Lots to do today here in The Huddle. We will talk a little Super Bowl as we wrap up the kind of the bye week before the Super Bowl week activities as the teams arrive in Houston. We will also hear from Herm Edwards on a basketball story, believe it or not. It's kind of interesting. We're going to have a guest at 2:20 today from AL.com. It's Michael Casagrande, and we'll talk particularly about some Alabama Crimson Tide issues, recruiting and so forth, with Michael coming up on the show. Hot takes and sausage with JC. I guess we have some visits coming in this weekend before signing day arrives and still some open questions. We'll tell you the latest we know on that. Preview the college basketball over the weekend. South Carolina plays at Missouri tomorrow night. Clemson at Pittsburgh tomorrow afternoon at 12 noon. That one you can hear here on ESPN Upstate. So important games for both the Tigers and the Gamecocks basketball teams this weekend. Maybe a little baseball preseason poll information to pass along. Talk about college baseball season, which is now just around the corner. And whatever else you would like to get into with us at 844-477-3776. Our text line, driven by Carolina Coaches RV Superstore, 71307. And we are on Twitter at ESPN Upstate.
And now, the opening drive. Here's what's trending in the sports world on The Huddle.
So get ready for a week full of Super Bowl talk coming up next week. But we're wrapping up this week of kind of some light practices, maybe some healing of injuries, and a few off-field stories here and there this week as the Patriots and the Falcons get ready for Super Bowl game week, and they'll be practicing in Houston next week. Jeff Darlington with ESPN talks about a wrap-up of the first week of preparations for this year's Super Bowl.
Such a critical week for both teams, the Patriots and the Falcons, one that is spent installing the bulk of the game plan before either team even leaves for Houston. And it is interesting to note that both teams are taking their own unique approaches. Falcons head coach Dan Quinn saying that he's treating this as if there's a game on Sunday, this coming Sunday. That's how much of the game plan he wants to have installed. Patriots head coach Bill Belichick with a slightly more relaxed approach, noting that he wants anywhere between 50 to 100%, probably somewhere between 60 and 70% installed by the time the team leaves on Monday. And this is about more than just installing a game plan this week. It's also about tying up any loose ends away from the field. For instance, I'm told that Belichick actually met with the family members of players to give them advice on how to avoid distractions and stay focused, even giving them contact information for staff members so they can deal with ticket requests, for instance. I guess when you've been to six Super Bowls before, you tend to think of everything.
Both these teams have been pretty careful not to provide any bulletin board material for the other guys this week. But we did get word yesterday of a little feud involving a Boston newspaper and a gas station in Georgia. A manager of a station in Gainesville, Georgia, has halted sales of Sam Adams beer. Because he read a column by Dan Shaughnessy with the Boston Globe, and the headline of this column was, "It's hard to get pumped up about a Super Bowl against Atlanta." Shaughnessy called Atlanta a place with absolutely zero enthusiasm for professional sports. Mm. We talked about that a little bit earlier this week, and I think we both disagree with that to some extent. He said, "I was already pumped up that we were in the Super Bowl and matched up against living legends like Belichick and Brady. Then this article pops up and belittles our sports team and our fans, fan bases. He says, I was irritated at the shots this guy took at the fan base and Atlanta as a whole, so he said he had to do something. And his idea was to not sell Sam Adams, made by Boston Beer Company, at his gas station, at least until after the Super Bowl. Well, Sam Adams noticed this. Sam Adams Beer is their Twitter handle, Samuel Adams Beer. And they tweeted after seeing this, won't be their only loss. And then they said, don't worry, Atlanta, we're still drinking Coca-Cola. So it's pretty good stuff. Pretty good back and forth there. Here, I feel like it's a little overblown, this stuff about Atlanta sports fans. I get it, because they don't really support the teams when they're not winning, and then they kind of show up when the teams start winning. But there's a lot to do in Atlanta. Atlanta's a big city with a lot going on, and they have. I gave you the attendance figures this year. Was it like 98% capacity? For the Falcons?
Yeah, and look,
pretty dang good.
The Falcons' support has been getting better and better. Ever since Michael Vick, that era, you know, it's been they've been supported pretty well. I mean, the Braves have kind of waned some support because
they stink.
They've started going backward, and it's tough. When they went 54-106 in 1988, which, by the way, that year I was 11 years old, and I watched almost all those games, so I'm rooted in the Braves, so to speak. I don't anymore, but that's what happened. Weren't a lot of people at Atlanta Fulton County Stadium, and 2 years later, I mean, it was packed. I think there's something to be said for the Hawks, and you would think Atlanta would be a better NBA market.
Yeah. And we said they draw in the bottom third of the league.
And people have tried professional hockey there, and I think there's a small group of Atlantans, I guess is what you call them, mm-hmm. that love hockey, that are fanatical and go out and support the Thrashers and before that the Flames. But it's just not a place where I think hockey is going to ever be successful.
They moved their team to Canada, right?
But the Braves, when they're up, and then the Falcons for the past 10, 15 years, they've enjoyed good support. I mean, is it a place like New York or Philadelphia or Boston? No. But those places don't have college sports. I mean, you go to a game at Boston College, you go to a game at Temple, you know, you go to a game. I mean, Rutgers is in New Jersey, so that's kind of a different thing. It's not actually in New York City. There's no college football in New York City. So, I mean, it's just different because fans have different allegiances and different levels of sports they're passionate about. And Atlanta will always be, you know, one of the college football meccas. I mean, right. The Hall of Fame's there, et cetera. I think next to Birmingham, Alabama, it's probably the capital of college football. So, you know, when you have a city that's that tuned in to a college sport, you know, your pro sports aren't going to get as much passion as maybe they will at other spots. But that's... You know, Shaughnessy's just out there stirring the pot.
Yeah, which is good. It's fun.
I mean, yeah, it is.
You know, it may be fun, but I think, why would this story, I mean, a guy at a gas station, who cares? I mean, they're trying to strum up excitement about a Super Bowl that I don't think a lot of people care to see, because I think most people believe that the Patriots are going to win and there's no point in watching.
Mm. Well, they're misguided if they think that.
Oh, I agree, because we've all said that you and I have said that we mm-hmm. believe Atlanta's going to win.
You know, Atlanta's not.
How's a story like this become national?
Just a cute little side story.
Yeah, it's the nature of media.
Yeah, it's just a cute little side story.
What I'm saying
trying to say it's important.
There are no other stories out mm-hmm. there about it, really. And no mm-hmm. one's making any big-time news. No one's putting out any bulletin board material.
But JC's point is right, and that is if you're the Eagles, you can suck, as they do, and still have that passionate fan base. There are markets where teams are followed, whether they're good or bad. Green Bay would be another one. And Atlanta's not one of those. But I don't think it's a terrible sports town. Is it the worst sports town in the country? Because that's the way people are treating it. And, again, when the Braves have been good, they've had great followings down there. And the Falcons are drawing now. And I think they're going to draw in the new place. And I think they're going to be good for a while, so they'll be drawing for a while. I just think it's a little overblown. You know, and that's a national take on it, that Atlanta's a horrible sports town. A little overblown in my mind. These two teams are trying to be very complimentary of each other this week. We'll see if something comes out next week. Maybe somebody will say something during the media days down in Houston for the Super Bowl that'll stir something up. But Kyle Shanahan, the offensive coordinator for the Falcons, is they've tried to ask him some questions about the Patriots, like some of the criticism they've received. Despite boasting the league's top scoring defense this season, they only give up 15.6 points a game. Shanahan said today, "That blows my mind that people would be doing that." He says, "This is the best defense we've seen in the NFL this year. You watch the film, you see exactly why their numbers are the way they are. That's why they're number one in the NFL. He says they have good players all around, interchangeable players that can be pass rushers, linebackers, corners, safeties. Extremely good scheme, and this will be the biggest challenge we've had all this year." Now, this offense for the Falcons behind Matt Ryan has averaged almost 34 points a game during the regular season. And in the playoffs, 36. No, they 36 in one game and 44 in the next. So they're averaging 40 in the playoffs in their wins over the Seahawks and the Packers. So they are lighting up the scoreboard there. So that's going to be a fun thing to watch. That really good New England defense against that really good Atlanta Falcons offense. On the flip side, the Patriots had the third best scoring offense in the league this year. They averaged 27.6 a game. And the Falcons were 27th in the league in scoring defense. They give up 25.4. But they've only given up about 19 during their current six-game winning streak. So their defense, yeah, their defense has improved dramatically. I like this Super Bowl. You guys like this Super Bowl? I like this Super Bowl.
It's a heck of a matchup. I mean, you know, you look at the Falcons and their offense versus the defense of the Patriots. It's the best offense versus the best defense. And then Atlanta's defense has kind of emerged. And then the Patriots' offense is really good, too. So it's a strength-on-strength kind of matchup. So I think that despite what Dez Bryant said about, you know, only the Cowboys could have beaten the Falcons this year. I don't agree with that. I think if the Falcons, you know, had continued to play well and going on the road to AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Texas would have been different than playing at the Georgia Dome. But I think the Falcons could have gone out there and beaten them. I think that, you know, they were a hot offense. And then in the playoffs, their defense has emerged. And I think that's the difference in why they're the best team in the NFC this year.
This is an off year for me. You have those every once in a while where the Super Bowl is not exciting to me. I'm not excited about gathering the snacks that I'm going to have. I'm not excited about the commercials because I hate one team and I'm indifferent about the other. I'm going to watch because I always watch and because it's part of my job. And I just can't get excited about it.
If you hate one team, that should motivate you to watch.
It should. it should, but I don't know. You know, maybe I'll change. It's that 2 weeks. I mean, we got a week now, but I mean, you're waiting. As we're a couple, if this time next week, who knows? Maybe I'll be more excited about it.
Some tough news for the Vikings today. This is just breaking on Teddy Bridgewater. Bleacher Report's reporting he's probably not going to play in 2017, the whole year. He suffered a devastating knee injury, and it was a pretty horrible injury, if you'll think back to that, right before the start of last season. He underwent reconstructive surgery to repair a torn ACL and other ligaments. And according to Jason Cole of the Bleacher Report, doctors have told the Vikings quarterback recovery time for his injury is at a minimum of 19 months, putting him out until spring 2018. Mike Zimmer has said that he doesn't know. There's no timetable for his return, but they're just focused on him making a full recovery. Of course, they have Sam Bradford now, and he looked pretty good at times for the Vikings and then not as good in other times. It looked like Bradford's your man in Minnesota. I don't know. Do you think Bridgewater gets back and gets the job back? One of those guys may have to be traded.
Well, yeah. I hope he does because he's a kid I covered as a recruit. He's a very competitive kid. I hate that that's happened to him. But you never know with something like this. I mean, this is a very serious injury. If he can get back, though, I mean, I think that, you know, when you look at the NFL and you consider that 2/3 of the teams have serious quarterback issues.
Yeah.
you know, as well as he's performed so far in his career, I think he'll have opportunities. It may not be with the Vikings, and certainly they have to make a decision based on their franchise and what's best for it.
Isn't it kind of puzzling to you guys that on this planet, with all the people that we have, you can't find 32 people to play quarterback at a high level in the NFL?
Yeah, it's difficult.
You just can't. I mean, you know,
and
it's hard
I
enough to find 16.
Some of that is because of the mistakes that they make drafting, and why I think Dabo Swinney is smart to be sort of fanatical about Deshaun Watson, because I think that's a guy that's a no-brainer. And I think a lot of times scouts overthink it. They overthink it in a lot of positions. But quarterback, as we've seen, is so critical. Don't believe me? Ask Alabama. Don't believe me? Ask the teams that the Super Bowl teams have defeated on the way to the championship this year. I mean, it's critical at all levels of football, even more so in the NFL. You know, I don't know why that's the case. I also think, though, Greg, if you look at football in general, there are more bad quarterbacks than good quarterbacks.
Well, yeah, sure.
And I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, sort of the way offenses have evolved. I think a lot of spread guys put up big numbers and everybody loves them, and they're very mechanically excellent, and scouts kind of fall in love with them and all that, and that's fine. But those are 7-on-7 guys. I mean, those are guys that – the Big 12 guys, I guess. And I think that, you know, there's something to be said for a quarterback that's sort of diverse in his approach and can do a lot of different things and can succeed. But with the way offenses are going these days, though, I mean, it's hard to draft somebody that's, you know – not a spread guy, because I mean, even Watson, you know, that is a spread and an up-tempo type of offense. So it's interesting. I see it a lot, you know, with quarterbacks that are recruits that just go to college and end up busting out. And it's interesting how that's – I think it's worse now than it has been.
Is this the only position that you can say that about, though? I mean, the quarterback is such a focal point for everybody. Mm-hmm. I mean, kickers. Are there 32 good kickers?
All of them.
I mean, they get fired.
Relatively solid.
They move around. Yeah. It's a big rotation of the same guys going back and forth. I mean, if a nose guard, I mean, are there 32 really good nose guards?
No, I mean,
not every defense plays with nose guards, but still.
You're right, though. I mean, some positions are more rare, and that's why they get drafted higher. You know, it's hard to get big athletic defensive linemen. It's hard to get pass rushers. You want to know why Vic Beasley was such a high draft pick? Look at what he's doing. He can rush the passer. That's a more rare trait to be excellent at that. Running backs. There are a lot of good running backs.
Yeah.
You know, that's why the highest one we've had drafted in three or four drafts has been Todd Gurley. And he was a special talent, and I still think he is. But, you know, it's just one of those things where position value – yeah, there is a position value. But the number one position value, I think, is quarterback. I'll also say this. Offensive line, with how athletic and big the defensive lines have gotten in college and pro football – that's another very hard position to be really good at. And you got to have five of them, not just one.
Right.
So it's difficult, I think, in all levels of football, given the athleticism on defense, to have a great offensive line.
But if you have three really good ones and two okay ones, you can do all right.
Yeah, you can piece it. You can yeah. piece it together. But yeah. It's better to have, you know, they got to at least be okay. Because if you have one, I mean, look at South Carolina this year. There were a lot of plays where one guy in particular would just whiff and it blows up the whole play.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, so the other four did their job. So that's kind of how it happens, is it? You got to have a quarterback, protect the quarterback, and be able to keep those defensive linemen off of you.
All right. You want to get in with us today in the huddle? The phone lines are open to you at 844-477-3776. Text line 71307. Breaking me back with more Friday edition of the huddle. Wide open to you. Come on in. ESPN Upstate. JC, you told us yesterday that it looked like Clemson might get this running back out of Louisiana, and they did. Travis Etienne of Jennings, Louisiana, announced his commitment. for the Clemson version of the Tigers over LSU. And people making pretty big deal about his, you know, Clemson's ability to go into Louisiana to get a guy like this. Is this significant?
Yeah, and I'm going to talk a little bit about this in my Friday freak take and hot takes and sausage. But, yeah, I mean, it's outstanding when you're able to go into another state like Louisiana where most of the kids go to LSU and beat LSU. There aren't too many programs in the country that can do that, especially considering Clemson kind of came in late on him. That just kind of shows you some power that the championship and the way Clemson is recruiting, it kind of shows you how powerful it is. So I think, you know, when you look at him, he's an excellent back. I like him better than the back from Memphis that decommitted or that they parted ways with, and he ended up going to Ole Miss. Louisiana puts out a lot of backs. You can look at Darius Geis as an example of that. Kind of an in-state kid that followed Fournette in there, and he ended up being better than Fournette this year. So this kid's really, really good. He's a guy that you know, has kind of built a little low to the ground. He's 210 right now. He'll probably end up being 225, 230, and we'll be able to run for power, run for speed, and I like him. I think that this is a heck of a get. He's ranked 212th nationally according to 24/7 Sports. Composite rankings. I could make a good case for him maybe being a little higher because of his speed. You know, just kind of what he's done on film. Watching this film right now, I mean, this guy's a slasher. Looks like Wayne Gallman when he runs the football a little bit, but probably a tick faster than Wayne was coming out of high school. So I think it's a excellent get. And my understanding is Clemson's done now for this class, and they have a big junior day this weekend and can get started on a loaded 2018 class, at least as far as the Carolinas are concerned. So it's a good finish, and they're looking for a big start coming up starting next Wednesday, which is signing day. And I do think Clemson will probably get a outstanding class of 2018 commitment right there on signing day next Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. When he made his announcement talking about Etienne, he's already doing a little smack talk. He said he would be taking his talents to the real Death Valley. He didn't waste any time.
No, and that's interesting right there, because that's I mean, that's tough to say that in that state. Yeah. You know, I mean, you go back and forth, but you know, that's bold. Yeah. But you you like that in a kid. Yeah. A kid that's got the bravery to leave Louisiana and come all the way to Clemson, and that's immediately going to throw down the gauntlet with his home state school. I mean, his chances of being able to take on a linebacker or run over somebody, I think, are a little higher, you know, just because of that. I mean, some guys are talkers and not necessarily performers, but you love the confidence.
Yeah. I saw where somebody, some reporter somewhere talking, you may know more than I do, had talked to the father of Jamiest Williams, who the Gamecocks are battling with Georgia for, and that the dad says he thinks Georgia's leading with him. What do you think?
I agree. I think Georgia is has had momentum with him for a couple of weeks. I think that right now Georgia looks, excuse me, in good position to sort of flip him. But he's been committed to South Carolina for a long time. He's making his official visit this weekend, assuming he does get there. And I think that it's been confirmed he is, although there was some worry earlier in the week that because he didn't take an official visit to Georgia last weekend, that he would just shut down the Carolina official and go to Georgia again. And then the writing's on the wall at that point. But the Gamecocks will have him on campus for 48 hours. He's been committed to them for a long time. He has a great relationship with Travaris Robinson. It's just going to come down to wanting to stay really close to home or wanting to come to South Carolina, you know, wanting to join a top three recruiting class versus maybe being the crown jewel of the Gamecocks. So that those are all things that he'll consider. And he's a player that, you know, I've talked about several times that if you just look at him, he's listed as a corner, probably not a guy that's going to come in and start either place at corner year one, but he's so good in the return game. I think he'll at least make a push either place to be the kick returner. And I think if you're Kirby Smart, you know, they kind of didn't want this kid to begin with, or, you know, slow played him or whatever. I think if you're Kirby Smart, you start thinking about it. You're like, do I really want to be in a tie game in the fourth quarter against the Gamecocks in Athens next year with the division on the line? And Jamias Williams returns a punt 80 yards for a touchdown. I mean, you know, you don't want that. You don't want him to go to a division rival. So I think it's, you know, given that he is kind of a potential game-changing guy, you know, just simply because of his ability in the return game,
yep.
I think you try to get him to stay and come to Athens and be a dog.
Well, if South Carolina loses Jamias Williams, they already lost Nazruldeen to Florida State. I would imagine your Big Spur message boards will be lighting up a little bit on some panicking.
Well, it is, but some people have already talked about it, and I think there's some a certain degree of acceptance among the message board people. Gamecocks also have several guys they're sort of waiting on, and they have a chance to flip four-star defensive tackle Devontae Wyatt from Georgia. He was a guy that was committed to the Gamecocks to begin with. They've got a kid coming in this weekend, Jordan Carty, for an official visit, 6'7", 265 out of Fort Lauderdale. Gamecocks obviously need big athletic offensive tackles. I mean, not necessarily for next year because it's developmental, but down the road. I saw this kid in Columbia at the Gamecocks prospect camp over the summer. He looks like a power forward. Sees how you draw him up. Aaron Sterling's a player out of Georgia, 6'3", 256, that provides kind of a pass rushing element. Brad Johnson from over in Pendleton is a guy that you know, has some pass rushing ability. It's the Gamecocks or Virginia Tech, and boy, it's really close because his skill set fits with what Bud Foster likes to do on defense at Virginia Tech. He's very comfortable with those coaches, and you know, both staffs have made him a priority, so we'll see how that goes. And then Javon Kinlaw, who is from Goose Creek, who's in junior college now, 6'6", 305-pound defensive lineman. I've been told that the Carolina coaching staff thinks, from a raw talent perspective, you know, he may be better than anybody they've got right now. So those guys are important, too. I mean, South Carolina obviously needs to upgrade its lines of scrimmage. I think that is as important as getting a guy that's highly ranked. And some of these guys are highly ranked. But when you look at South Carolina's speed on their roster and their overall kind of makeup, you need as many guys like Jamias Williams as you can possibly get. And you need more than just one. And you also need a lot of linemen. So even if he does flip, you know, it's not positive under any circumstances because he's a special player. But the Gamecocks still are going to come out of this class, you know, filling their needs quite nicely and also signing, you know, more line guys on both sides than I anticipated, which is a good thing because, you know, that's a big need too.
Do you know where South Carolina is in the 24/7 rankings right now?
Absolutely, yeah. The Gamecocks right now are number 20 nationally in the 24/7 Sports team rankings, which is based on composite, so it's kind of a consensus. And then overall in the SEC right now, they're number 7. If you take that and kind of do it in the SEC East, which a lot of the East teams aren't recruiting so hot rankings-wise right now, they're 3rd. Behind Georgia, and then a class at Tennessee that's, you know, gone up to, you know, number 6 in the conference. But if you look at the conference rankings, Bama's 1, Georgia's 2, then you got LSU, A&M, Auburn, then Tennessee and South Carolina. So within the division, the Gamecocks are up there kind of behind Georgia along with the Vols as far as recruiting goes. Vols also have 28 in their class right now. Gamecocks have 22. So the way the points are calculated, that could be a difference as well. If the Gamecocks finish with some of these guys down the stretch, their class could end up being ahead of Tennessee's and 2nd in the SEC East.
I know Clemson has a small class, but where are they on the list right now?
Clemson, actually, to have such a small class, Clemson is pretty good. They're approaching the top 10. 2nd in the ACC behind FSU right now. FSU has 21 commits. Clemson has 14, and my understanding is they're done, but they have the 11th-ranked class in the country. So this is a to be a smaller class, this is tremendous. 5-star receiver T. Higgins, 5-star quarterback Hunter Johnson. A.J. Terrell, who is a 5-star level. He's not 5 stars according to composite, but almost a 5-star corner. Justin Foster out of North Carolina, one of the top players in North Carolina. I mean, they were selective, but they put together top to bottom an excellent class. And I'll reiterate, I really like their offensive line class. At least, you know, two of the guys. They went to Ohio and got an interior guy, went to New Jersey, got a big tackle. You know, those are spots you don't go wrong as often recruiting offensive linemen.
Signing day next Wednesday. We'll watch for developments through the weekend. Get to the phones and talk to Jim this afternoon. Hi, Jim.
How's it going?
Good.
That golf course where I play golf at is a bunch of Gamecock fans. And they keep talking about these two kids from Mallard Creek going to South Carolina. I think he said one of them was an offensive lineman. One of them might have been a wide receiver. I just want to ask J.C. what he knows about them.
That was both linemen, J.C., wasn't it, from Mallard Creek? I'm trying to remember. I know one of them was. We saw him against Burns this year.
Yeah, they only have one commit from Mallard Creek. They had two for a while, but it was that other kid ended up going to Florida. Eric Douglas is from Mallard Creek. He's an interior offensive lineman. Pretty good Shrine Bowl performance. You know, solid guy. I think has a chance. He's just got to develop.
I didn't know how big he was or anything like that, whether he had any size or not. It's pretty big on both of them.
Yeah, they put out some good players at Mallard Creek. We kind of kept an eye on them. We appreciate the call there, Jim. We kind of kept an eye on them during that game with Burns up there. And I didn't see him do a whole lot that night, JC. I know we were kind of watching them, and you were down on the sidelines for that game. But they got some optimism about the one guy that's still coming there. So we'll keep an eye on him. There's some sad news today reported out of North Carolina. Charles Shackelford has been found dead this morning. May remember Shaq, the other Shaq that's a basketball player. He played at NC State, native of Kinston, and that's about all we know, that he was found this morning at a home in Kinston, North Carolina, his hometown. He played some in the NBA, mostly a backup there, and then he went over to Europe and did a pretty good job in Europe. He was a big rebounding star in Europe. One of the famous quotes of Charles Shackelford, I'll never forget. He said, I can shoot with my left hand. I can shoot with my right hand. I'm amphibious. That was a pretty good one from Shackelford. I don't know what happened to him today, unfortunately, that's been confirmed that he was found deceased this morning, and we're waiting for more information on that to come out. He had been into some trouble before. He had some drug issues, had some weapons issues that got him in trouble. He certainly had some grades issues back when he was at NC State. He played at NC State from 85 to 88 and then got drafted by the Nets in the second round of the 88 NBA draft. And then he went to Europe and played for several years. So we'll let you know if we find out any more about that. But that news breaking, reported by WNCT Television out of Greenville, North Carolina. Hmm. Some sad news there. All right, 844-477-3776. Got to hit another break here. We'll come back. We're going to give you a chance to win $1,000 coming up in about 12 minutes with a keyword. Stand by for that. Much more coming up here, Friday Huddle. Heading into the weekend, we have Clemson basketball for you tomorrow. Clemson in Pittsburgh, 12 noon is the tip, 11:30 airtime tomorrow. South Carolina will play at Missouri tomorrow night. South Carolina playing well. They did lose that Kentucky game, but otherwise, they have been winning on a nice little streak here, and just don't want to stumble now. At Missouri would be not a good loss. They need to go up there and win that thing. So we'll watch that one and have that to talk about on Monday. This is kind of surprising news, JC, to me, and that is that Bruce Ellis has resigned as the Hannah football coach. That news reported by the Anderson Independent Mail in the past few minutes. News release from Anderson School District 5, the School District 5 Superintendent Tom Wilson said, Coach Ellis not only worked on building a strong team, but more importantly, a strong program. He will be missed, but he leaves a strong foundation to be built upon. Only there for three seasons, and he turned it around. They had a 1-10 record his first season, and then they made back-to-back playoff appearances at Hanna. This past year, they were 6-5, some ups and downs, but they were competitive. I remember they lost to Spartanburg like in overtime, 14-7. They went down to the wire, I think, with Gaffney. They beat Malden, had some nice wins. Easley, Greenwood, they beat. So I don't know. It's a little bit surprising that that Alas would be resigning. Don't know what he's going to do next, but they're looking for a new football coach.
Yeah, and they have they had two, you know, major college prospects for 2018.
Mm-hmm. So June, that quarterback, was he one of them?
The quarterback's gone. Quarterback, I think, was this class. Is the way that the quarterback was the Williamson kid. What did,
No, that's not who I'm talking about. I know, yeah, he, they have one that transferred. I know Williamson was there, but no, this guy was just a sophomore this year.
Okay.
Yeah, so he's a young guy.
They got, but they had Kavez Sherrard, who's an offensive line prospect, and then Stephon Wynn. Of course, he left the program, is going to IMG. And then they have a 2019 kid that's a big, big kid, defensive end / offensive tackle. So they had some talent, Division I type guys coming up through the chute there. But you never know. So sometimes these high school coaching changes are sort of strange as to how they go down or whatever.
Yeah, and it's an interesting time of the year. We're talking about the end of January, but, we've seen some of those happen in January. It does seem to be fairly common that's the month that some coaches decide to move on or changes are made.
Maybe he's taking the AC Flora or the Eastside job.
Yeah, there's some other open ones. That's right.
Yeah,
so. Congratulations on the success that he had there, Bruce Hollis at Hannah, but he's moving on, and Hannah will begin a coaching search, and you want to take care of that pretty quickly here heading into February.
Yeah.
You don't want to let that linger too long, so I'd imagine they will ramp up a pretty quick search.
Yeah, Hannah's a good school, good job, I think. What Scott Early's done at Westside's been pretty impressive, and, that's one part of it down there in Anderson, I guess, but historically Hannah's been better than Westside, and certainly I think that's a school that has a lot of resources and a lot of opportunity to be good at the sport of football.
Maybe Ben Boulware doesn't get drafted, he can go back and be the coach.
How about that? No.
Nah, probably
not. If I were an NFL team, I'd sign that guy just to cover kicks. If he's not an NFL linebacker, just sign him to go down there and knock the crap out of somebody.
Yeah, he's going to get a chance to play a little more before he needs to think about a coaching career if that's what he wants to do. But anyway, we'll watch that opening for you. The Stanford ban is back. They have been reinstated from their suspension, but they're back under provisional status through the end of the 2016-2017 academic year. They have been violating, according to a report there, violating alcohol policy and a travel ban. There were several investigations there that go back to 2015. The report said that there was a systemic cultural problem in the Stanford band. Can you believe that? The Stanford band.
Were they drunk while they were playing?
I don't know.
Cultural.
Why is that band marching crooked? I don't get it.
It's funny to me. The outstanding issues, this report said the outstanding issues have not been taken seriously by the band or its leadership. Nothing more will be accomplished without extreme consequences. So they have come up with a process to develop a new organizational framework under the leadership of a new music director. And they are back under provisional status. How about that? That's just crazy, man. The Stanford band. Getting in trouble in the Stanford band, you're doing something.
I remember they cost them a game back in the 80s.
Oh, that was the...
The band is on the field.
Crazy kick return.
Kick return, the band was on the field. Yeah. But the Stanford band's kind of one of these comedic type bands. And
trying to be funny.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.